My new book, Facts That Aren't True, is out now. Don't forget about my other book, Rational Answers to Stupid Questions. I haven't done any material on Terrence Howard because all of the stuff he says about math and physics, to the extent he talks about physics, it's just, I don't know enough to really understand why what he's saying doesn't make any sense. I could sit here and just say, well, that sounds like total nonsense, but explaining why is actually really hard. But I listened to I listened to a couple minutes of this a little bit later on here, like right around this bump right there. And I thought, well, okay, I think I might be able to touch a little bit on that. So the beginning part, I think he was just mostly talking about his 1 times 1 equals 2 thing, which, again, I don't know why. I don't know how to tell you that doesn't make any sense. So we're picking up right here, right after Terrence did a little advertisement. So what do we got?
Okay, so now let me
ask you. That's a problem.
So then what's 1.1 times 1.1?
I don't know.
Is it big?
Jeez. The guy claiming he can revolutionize math doesn't know what that is. So 1.1 times 1.1. So what's 10% of 1.1? 0.11. So 1.1 plus 0.11. I'm really bad at doing this without seeing it written out. That would be 1.21. Well, actually, it's actually simpler than that. It's the same thing as 11 squared is 121, but we have the decimal there. So yeah, it would be 1.21, the same as 11 squared. I don't know.
Bigger than 2?
It would have to be.
Wait, what? Okay, maybe he could solve 1.1 times 1.1, but he's just doing his whole thing here now. Because they were just talking about if 1 times 1 is 2, then 1 point anything times 1 point anything would have to be... Yeah, then it would have to be, like, by his logic. I don't get it. The 1 times 1 equals 2 thing. What multiplication means is it's saying, what if you have this many of this thing? If you have 1, 1, you have to, and I don't understand his explanation, so I can't really add to it. We'll have to just move on.
Anytime action times an action has to increase in volume.
No, but so if...
Numbers aren't... I mean, like, he's just saying, yeah, classical mechanics and numbers. You don't, and this is the thing with these bullshit artists. They're just saying words, and they combine things in ways that are incredibly inappropriate and just total non-starters and non-sequiturs.
1 times 1 is 2. That would mean that 1.1 times 1.1 would need to be bigger than 2, right?
It would have to be. Why wouldn't it be? If they want to keep things back into a matrix, that principles, the...
Times 1.1 would need to be bigger than 2, right?
It would have to be. Why wouldn't it be? It's...
Why wouldn't it be? Because what that means is you're adding 10% to something. A fraction of something is always less than the thing, so you can't double it. I mean, 1/1 is, in a way, a fraction, so at most you could double, and then you could have improper fractions, whatever, get off me. But this is just so incredibly bad.
Only the mathematics that they're using, the identity principles, which I call the Jim Crow laws of mathematics, that's the thing that holds them back, because they want to keep things back into a balanced place. They want, instead of allowing the expansion that happens with most numbers, they just want to repeat. They would just want to get back to a
even
repeat.
For a basic, simple guy like me, like let's just say if I have $1.10 in a stock, okay, and that goes up 1.1%. What is it? $1.10 in a stock, but it goes up 1.1% rate of return in my stock portfolio. What's 1.1 of $1.10?
Look it up on the calculator.
It's $1.21. So, for example, so
exactly,
and so if I get a 1% rate of,
oh geez, Patrick Bet David being the smartest guy in the room is just so
return.
I don't know,
you know, on one, you know, if I do the percentage on the basic 1.1 times 1.1, it's still getting me 1.21. So to me, the basics of the 1 times 1 equals 2. That throws even a regular guy like me off.
Well, you've got to remember, in multiplying volumetrically, you're wrapping things back around.
Right.
Like an.
What do you mean, right? No, you're not. That statement didn't mean anything.
A pool, in a swimming pool, the pond, the ripples go out, hit the edge, and then they come back. The returning waves are added to the expanding waves.
This has nothing to do with. What does that have to do with multiplication?
Each returning wave is going to become multiplied even more.
No, they actually don't. They don't because waves lose energy to the environment. Like, if this were true, then all I'd have to do is snap my fingers, and that sound would keep amplifying until the energy of it exceeded the, there's that really great video by Vsauce from years ago, How Hot Can It Get? Where eventually the energy, in this case, maybe it's a little bit different, but the energy would become so enormous that it would fill the entire universe. It would become a greater quantity than, I don't know, than the universe could contain. Like, it would destroy the universe, probably. But Terrence, this doesn't happen. This never happens.
Pressure doesn't just expand out and keep going out. It's coming back. So you have to include the contraction. You have to include the returning wave. So that's why the volume metric would be different. But like,
this has nothing to do with multiplication.
Even with what you just did. Like, if I asked you, what's 0.10 times 0.10?
What? So 10% of 10% would be 0.01, right?
0.10 times 0.10 says 0.001, right?
Right.
But we know that 0.10 is a dime.
Okay.
We know that a dime times a dime, 10 dimes times 10 dimes equals a dollar.
No. One dime is not 0.1 of a dime. God, oh man. My wife is a second grade teacher. She has tons and tons of plastic money because they learn about money in second grade. It's part of their curriculum. And I mean, I don't know how far it goes, but I'm pretty sure they cover the, this is how many of each thing is in a dollar. And Terrence didn't go to school that day. I've never done a deep dive on this guy, but if this is where all of this comes from, it's just like I've already said. What he's doing is he's mixing things that don't at all belong together. Money, multiplication, and energy waves.
Should equal a dollar.
Not necessarily.
10 times 10.
No, I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing, but that is a whole number. A dime is still 10 cents. So 10 dimes is a dollar. So it's not the same in the dollar sense. I see what you're thinking, like 0.1 equals a tenth of a dollar.
I'm saying there's a problem with.
Yeah, get him, Patrick. Good job.
The decimal system.
Yeah, but if a dime is 0.1 of a dollar, right. Let's simplify it, right? But if you tell me, give me 10 of 0.1s, that equals 1. So that means I got 10 dimes.
Yeah.
But if you do 0.1 times.
We're breaking ground here.
0.1. Then you get 0.01,
yeah.
Right?
0.01.
Yeah, but that's a difference. So to me, the basics of the math, when you went there one
time. That doesn't go off to you? That doesn't seem off that if
no, because you're saying what if you have 10% of 0.1? What if you have a lesser quantity of what you started with? It go number go down.
This was, if we turn it into physical things, that's what I'm saying. Let's turn it.
Don't do that because it's not appropriate. Stop it.
The problem with our math is they've reversed, they've allowed it to be all imaginary. It does not have any physical resemblance. It's all fiat, where it should be.
No, but I just do investments. The way
I wish I knew more. Was like better trained in mathematics. So I could try to say something nice here, but I can't. But like what I do know is that going way back, you know, all these Greek mathematicians, they were obsessed with geometry. They thought geometry was the math of the universe. You could explain everything with it. And from what I understand, they felt that way because geometry was so reflected in nature. And then yes, like in the whenever math started to get reinvented and then reinvented or whatever, then it became very abstract. But those abstractions still allow us to know and understand the natural world at a deeper level. There's this really cool Veritasium video from a couple years back where he talks about imaginary numbers and how you can actually plug in imaginary number, like they're literally numbers that don't exist, the square root of -1, or they represent things that don't or can't exist or whatever. But when you plug them into certain quantum mechanical formulas, it sort of fixes the model, and the model starts to do things for us that are reflected in reality in ways that I cannot explain to you. Sorry.
Look at it is to say, what's 0.1% of, you know, a penny? What's 0.1% of a penny?
How long are we going to be on this? So yeah, the percent thing. Good job.
What's the value of a penny?
What's 0.1% of a dime? It's a penny, right? It gets smaller, right?
0.1%? No, 10%. 0.1 times a dime.
Right? So that's the, I don't look at it from the physics.
Wait a minute, 10%
of a penny, how long do they do this?
Of a dime would be a penny. Geez.
That's right.
10%.
So 0.1 is 10%, right? So if you go to the investment side, the argument of one-time ones in investments, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, insurance, it stops right there. But you're going out there and saying 1 times 1 equals 2, and you know that.
We're saying that as far.
Who is we?
Since our economics are still based on this linear, flat plane geometry,
right,
you can still use the 1 times 1 equaling 1 to perform their economic growth, mm-hmm, and their economic reactions. But if you're dealing with universal interactions, you have to. Our money may go out linearly, and we may measure it on a flat plane, but as far as the universe.
What does measuring money on a flat plane mean?
Verse behaving, how energy behaves. Energy curves and wraps back around itself. Energy doesn't follow a linear path. And all of the stuff we're talking about in physics and science is about energy. We're not talking about a fiat system.
But if you're doing pure math, then the only thing you're talking about is math.
System where they can have arbitrary rules for the money that any.
Is his whole thing, well, if you have an actual one of something and an actual one of another thing, and they interact, there's no sense in which there aren't two things there. But there's no such thing as one pencil times two pencils. Pencils don't multiply like that. They're not rabbits. But, well, I don't know where I was going with that.
Anything can happen with the numbers. Something times nothing can equal nothing and violate conservation of energies. If you're saying 1 times 0, mm-hmm, or you can divide, you can multiply by 0. But if you divide by 0, it creates an infinity. And division is supposed to be the inverse operation of multiplication. So what you're supposed to be able to do, multiplying.
I mean, is the opposite of nothing infinity? Is that why it is that way? I can't really say anything about this.
You're able to reverse that with division. So if you cannot divide by zero, then you cannot multiply by zero. All of their rules that they break so that their economic pathway can remain consistent. You want to do that, do that. But if you're talking about saving our planet, you're talking about how the universe saving behaves the and how the energy of the ether behaves, then there's very specific associations to the numbers. Each number is alive. Each number has value. It's not imaginary. It's not intangible. It is going to have an effect. So we have to multiply it according to how the universe does it.
Okay.
If you're talking about real things, then kind of. But again, real things don't multiply in the sense that he's talking about. I mean, maybe I'm missing something. Please tell me if I am. But I don't think so. I mean, I really don't. I mean, what's a sense in which this, like, if we take two objects and they're going to collide, then we would multiply the energy. Well, no, we would add the energy. We wouldn't really multiply it. I mean, multiplication is like a kind of addition. At least my dumbass brain is telling me that it's, in a sense, it's like that. But no, I don't know. Like I said, tell me what I'm missing, please.
So, okay. So I look at it more from the investment side, the math.
Oh, I don't care.
Well, we've been able to innovate. The first thing that everybody already knows about is the tangential flight with Linchpin. We have provided tangential flight, the ability to fly around your own center of mass, and unlimited mid-air bonding.
What?
That right there is the pressure condition created from 8 tetrians interacting, and they create that other greater pressure condition.
This was supposed to be an explanation of whatever the hell tangential flight is. You tell me if that made any sense.
And out of the vortices, we've attached now arms.
Mm-hmm.
But the 4 of these will now come together and lift this 50-pound barrel.
Yeah.
And then 5 of them will come together.
This looks like he modded Red Dead Redemption 2.
And pick up the 5 collected barrels because of their collected thrust.
Right. This is a whole new form of flight.
Entirely new form of flight. Tangential.
Oh, God.
Flight.
Yeah.
The ability to fly around your own center of mass. Mm-hmm. Something they've never been able to accomplish.
What does that even mean? Flying around your own center of mass? What does that mean? How are these drones not doing something that a drone doesn't already do? It sits there, it exists, it can fly around. You glue a bunch of them together, it sits there, it exists, it can fly around. What?
I mean, it's the end of cranes for the linchpin, because no matter how large the project is or how small it is, linchpins can modulate and cover over air, over land, over sea. You have flight vehicles that deal with, you know, that are able to deal with the air or deal with space or deal with war.
Wait a minute. Weren't some of those drones, didn't they have their thrusters because they were, it came around in kind of like, not a sphere, but whatever. Wouldn't the thrust be pointing upward, therefore pushing it down?
Water, you have cars for the land, but you don't have anything that is ubiquitous to all of these mediums. And that's what Linchpin is able to do. So when I say it's the end of cranes, it's the, so you have that. We've innovated flight. We've innovated geometry by having unlimited bonding. We've innovated
life. Yeah, he said something about, what did he say about bonding? It'll probably get brought up again.
Lighting. You know, we've innovated with our energy systems. And what I wanted to share with you, one of the biggest things that I talked about with the Howard Comma, its ability to pull energy directly from the van der Waals or from the zero point.
He's just saying words. Van der Waals, those are intermolecular forces, it's essentially, you can think of it like static electricity, but at the nano scale. It's what allows geckos to climb up walls, because if you look at the gecko's foot, it has these really, really tiny, they almost look like hairs, and the hairs have crazy numbers of split ends on the end of them, and that gives it extremely high surface area contact, because when you touch something, because of the unevenness of your skin, you're actually not making all that many contact points. But then he calls a van der Waal a 0 point. That has nothing to do with anything. What could he even mean by 0 point? That sounds more like a Lagrangian thing to me, but I don't think it's that either. I mean, who knows?
You know, we've already provided a means to do that.
Then where are any of your objects that do this? Or do you just have Red Dead Redemption 2 mods?
To where you don't have to pay for any energy anymore. The same thing when...
Then why is... Well, he's going to claim because the Jim Crow something is preventing it from being used in the real world or blah, blah, blah.
I talked about beryllium, utilizing beryllium, even though there was some idiot chemist that came out and said that what I said concerning beryllium was wrong. But I dare them to compare beryllium to, or beryllium's reaction to oxygen, the same way that magnesium behaves with sulfur, the same way that selenium behaves with magnesium, sulfur, selenium. Behaves with
calcium.
God, I just lost my thought.
What is he? Is he just talking about the periodic table? Yeah. So beryllium and oxygen are. He must be going off of valence electrons, because beryllium has 2, oxygen has 6, so they satisfy the octet rule. And then he said, so magnesium's below beryllium, sulfur's below oxygen. And then selenium, yeah, he must have been referring to calcium, but where, Terrence, where is this going?
Selenium?
Yeah, no, because...
Can you pull it up?
oxygen would form a bond with anything in group 2. This is 10th grade chemistry. I know, because I teach it, I did.
Magnesium, you have...
Can you pull up the charts, Ron?
Yeah, really quick. The way that selenium...
Yeah, if you can just pull up the periodic table and zoom in.
Selenium's relationship with calcium.
Okay.
The same relationship.
But they all have... Wait, is that the same one I'm using? Oh, no, it's different. But they all... I mean, this is just groups on the periodic table satisfying the octet rule. But he's pretending that beryllium and oxygen have a unique relationship. It's not.
Wait, that's selenium.
Beryllium would form a 1-to-1 compound with anything in group 2, or sorry, group 6, and anything in group 6 would form a 1-to-1 compound with anything in group 2.
Will mitigate what's taking place inside of calcium the same way that sulfur will mitigate what's taking place with the magnesium.
What does that mean? Because they will form a bond, which he hasn't said that they'll form a bond, but I can't imagine what else he could be talking about. Will mitigate what's going on in the element, in the atom? What does that mean, Terrence?
Oxygen, being the equal and opposite made of beryllium, will mitigate what's...
the equal and opposite. So we're back to... putting classical mechanics in places where it doesn't belong.
Taking place with beryllium. Jeez. And they will always have a strong attraction to each other. So whatever bullshit that was being spoken by those chemists, they do not know what they're talking about. And the problem with utilizing actual beryllium is it oxidates. So immediately they cover the surface.
He hasn't told us what he innovated with beryllium or why these and what these chemists actually said to him.
It's covered, and so the reaction stops. But
yes,
if you use the frequency of beryllium,
What does it mean for it to have a frequency? How do you use a frequency?
To separate the oxygen from the hydrogen and have small little apertures for the hydrogen to go through, because the hydrogen is a smaller waveform.
It's not a waveform. It's an atom. It's an element. He's saying you can use beryllium for electrolysis. Now, this is like the 30 seconds of the video I saw earlier. So I looked up a paper. This was the only thing I could really find. Beryllium 13 being able to do some, well, from what I understood, the only thing it really said it could do was split the hydrogen. So it wasn't doing like full electrolysis, but this is also just completely theoretical.
Then the oxygen will separate and the hydrogen will separate and they'll both be usable.
What did he say they figured out here? Free unlimited energy? I don't remember. I'm not going back. I don't remember exactly, but I mean, electrolysis, this wouldn't do anything. I mean, like, okay, potentially. Why am I being nice? We have an unlimited supply of water, but it's almost all salt water. If we could create a reaction that, because it takes a lot of energy to split water, where we can make an unlimited amount of hydrogen, then we could, then hydrogen cars would all of a sudden become really cheap, and making hydrogen would be really cheap, and that would be great for that purpose, but otherwise, I no.
And the problem with utilizing actual beryllium is it oxidates. So apertures for the hydrogen to go through, because the hydrogen is a smaller waveform. Then the oxygen will separate and the hydrogen will separate and they'll both be usable. We proved that. Science has proven that. Natural phenomenon has proven.
I disagree.
But they want to ignore that.
Establishment scientists has proven that.
They see it in everything, in all of their reactions. That's why they're using a lot of the chemists in a number of the interactions that they have. They'll use beryllium for a particular purpose because it will cause oxidation. And then they have a means by which to reverse that polarization, pushes, you know, whatever was oxidated onto it. And now it opens up the door again for the beryllium to work. There's another.
No idea what he's talking about there. Oxidation and polarization do not belong in the same sentence at all. It's as though he's pretending that oxidation is electrolysis in some sense. I don't think he's really trying to say anything. I think he's just saying words.
Number of means for it. They've seen it work, but because it is in opposition to the oil and industry world, they're fighting it. And so I brought the proof. I brought the simple proof when I provide it for you guys. I've on my website on Terry's Lynchpin, there's the white paper on how beryllium behaves and how oxygen behaves.
Who's broken that white paper down?
It's just gone up to my thing. Nobody refused.
So on his website in the merch, they have tangential flight things. I mean, these aren't even good renders. That one's kind of decent. How is this merch? You can't buy this. I mean, it doesn't exist, but transcendental lighting. Okay, I'm not going to lie. That looks pretty cool. So it looks like the only thing you can actually buy are shirts. Take me to the merch. Yeah, the only thing you can actually buy are t-shirts. Hey, good for him that these numbers aren't like insanely high, unlike Gwyneth Paltrow's website, Goop. But he said he has his paper on beryllium on his website, but I don't see anything. Beryllium, no. Beryllium, nope, nothing on. These aren't, is this a link to, nope, that's where I just was. Okay, so I mean, I don't know if he's lying about having a white paper on beryllium, but yeah, I don't know.
Can't get anyone to do a peer review. I've sent it off to publishers. Publishers refused to review it because Eric Weinstein, Brian Keaton, people came out, said the Dunning-Kruger effect. The amount of pain and suppression that's come my way because all I've tried to do is provide the proof out there. Nobody wants it.
Dunning-Kruger effect is a cognitive bias where people, Rob, it just completely disappeared on the screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. People with low competence in a specific area tend to overestimate their abilities, while highly competent individuals may underestimate their skills. This occurs when a lack of metacognition prevents those with low competence. So they're saying you're low competent in this topic. That's what they're saying.
In this topic. This is what Neil deGrasse.
All topics.
Came out and said. And so now he owes me an apology. Why? Because with those same things that he said had no value. Now we've already put them into a white paper, and we've been able to solve the seven millennial problems. And
but you haven't done anything, Terrence, yet. Jeez.
And the three body problems with the same equations or substances that he said created the Dunning-Kruger effect.
So everything you sent me, everything of the white papers you sent me, all of them, every one of these I have, right? Every one of these was sent to Dr. Yu has it. He's looked at him. So he'll come out here in a minute to give his perspective on this. And he's from NASA. But
there's a second. Yeah, this guy comes on later. I haven't watched any of it. I don't plan on watching any of it, but yeah.
One of his problems, though, that I see affecting him is he believes in the vacuum. He believes in the finite, infinite universe, you know, where there's no pressure changes between the planets, that there's just this great vacuum there, and doesn't recognize that this is just like being underwater. You know, where we are at the surface of the water is like the Goldilocks zone. This is the Goldilocks zone on our planet. Well, within the solar system, there's the Goldilocks zone where the Earth sits, and this fits for us. You go out 147 million miles away from the sun, where Mars is, the nitrogen is expanded to such an extent hydrogen has expanded to such an extent.
What does that mean?
There's no way to contain that into the body, the flesh of the body.
No, Terrence, the laws of physics aren't different on Mars. Conditions are different, but the laws of physics aren't different. The chemistry of life would operate the same way. It would be a different kind of life, and it would be a different chemistry, but like, at a fundamental level, no. I mean, if Mars, it has no atmosphere, so there's no atmospheric pressure, so it can't keep liquid water there. But if it did, or if we just went there and built a dome, and we had some water and organics and whatever, and we got all that nasty chlorine stuff or whatever's in the Martian soil that's toxic out of there, if we could put organisms on Earth there, and they would do just fine. Maybe it wouldn't like go on for tens or hundreds of millions of years, but they would be able to live.
Which is necessary in order for us to keep living. Oxygen, everything expands. You'll never be able to bring them back, these 147 million miles, back to where the Earth is. You're not going to be able to do that. Well, the 93 million miles where the Earth is. So anyone that goes out there, that's a wrap for them. Because, you know, 15 feet underwater, what happens to the nitrogen? It compresses, or 15 feet out of the water where the Earth is. So anyone that goes out there, that's a wrap for them. Because, you know, 15 feet underwater, what happens to the nitrogen? It compresses, or 15 feet out of the water, it expands.
That's what he meant? I don't know if that's what he... I mean, who knows if he's being consistent. But, yeah, so... He's talking about he doesn't like Musk's idea of us living on Mars because we couldn't live there. Like, obviously, you couldn't put somebody on Mars and have them live. But that's why we have pressurized spacesuits to deal with that. So that's why is he making such a big deal out of this? I wonder if he thinks we went to the moon. I have no idea.
and it keeps expanding. So anyone that tries to go out to where Mars is at that low pressure system where everything becomes mono or diatomic, everything is expanding itself.
Yes. Yes, low pressure is when everything becomes diatomic.
Out, you are dead.
There, yeah, no shit. Like, we know that.
There's no way. The spaceship would have to be so tight, or the suit would have to be so tight that you would not have any motion. But the amount of expansion will not allow you to be able to come back to the Earth. Like, if you took something from the bottom of the...
So He's saying that we can't do space exploration because we would get the bends. Like, no, Terrence, the modules are pressurized. And like with deep sea diving, you just have to do it slowly. It's like it takes like 6 months to get to Mars. I think that's the fastest or maybe it's 9. I don't remember exactly, but that's definitely enough time.
The ocean, and you bring it all the way up to the top, and then you try and take it back to the bottom of the ocean. What happens to it? It implodes at the change of pressure. We are made for this particular pressure condition at 93 million miles away. You're not going to be able.
It doesn't matter how far away you are. You can have you can have, what is it, 1013 millibars wherever you want, as long as you just You can make those conditions wherever you want.
We don't have a human being on Mars, plain and simple. We don't have the proper pressure conditioned
bodies. You don't think
bodies.
So?
No. It's impossible. You're just going to expand out and blow up.
You will No, I don't think you would blow up, but...
Blow up.
Well, doesn't this kind of contradict, though? Because on one end, you're saying it's possible to have zero-point energy, where oil industry and all this other stuff, and the industry is saying, you're out of your mind. You don't know what you're talking about. There's no way, you know. And then, yeah, well, here's what Lynchman, this is what we could do. Elon is saying, I want to go have, you know, life on Mars or on another planet. And you're saying, there's no way that's possible.
No, there's life on Mars, but the life has changed.
What? Oh, no. That was actually a really smart insight by David, or by Patrick, sorry. Because what he said was, look, you have these alternative ideas and the mainstream is shouting you down, but the mainstream is saying we can do these things and here you are shouting it down. So what's the difference? And now, but, so there's life on Mars.
The life force changes. The system of water, H2O, changes as you go further out.
So he doesn't think there's life on Mars. The life force is on Mars, but it changed because water changes as you go. No, it doesn't. It's H. Like, we know that there's water on Mars. It's just frozen.
Two atoms of hydrogen, one atom of oxygen. I guess the further out you go, what happens to the next one? Does it become two atoms of carbon and then one atom of sulfur?
Jeez. No, Terrence, it's just water. What is he doing? Chat, what is it doing? I'm sorry, I cannot keep it together. No, water is... H2O, that's just like the definition of what water is. Anywhere in the universe, water is water.
It all continues out. The water life principle remains consistent. That's why on in Uranus or those far out planets, they still have precipitation as rain, but now it's methane that's coming down.
Let's try to be nice. He's saying that maybe the chemistry of life somewhere else wouldn't be water-based. It could be based on methane, like in the lakes of Saturn's moon Titan. Maybe that's what he's trying to do, but the way he just couches it in this ridiculous language is so, it's just so unappealing.
And it's just the water, or the H2O, like what I was saying on Joe, was that the relationship between carbon and hydrogen are the same as the relationship between carbon and silicone, and the same between silicone and between cobalt.
He's really not following his periodic table at all at this point. We imagine there could be silicon-based, it's not silicone. Silicone is what you seal a gasket, or not a gasket, but like a window or your sink with, or what you, or what the Kardashians are made of. We do have silicone-based life, but not, we don't know of silicon-based life yet. Unless you believe that Google engineer who said that that the AI became alive. But no, we think it could exist because silicon and carbon have the same chemical properties. But he was saying the relationship between hydrogen and oxygen is the same as between carbon and silicon. He's not talking about the same thing at all. He was trying to do his equal and opposite thing from before, but then mixed that with elements in the same group having the same chemical properties.
It's the same tone. It's just under a different pressure condition. So you can manipulate the entire universe by changing the motion and pressure conditions because it's all...
Okay, now that came out of nowhere and has nothing to do with anything.
Waves. It's not a physical thing. So as far as our bodies are concerned, if you wrapped an entire ship in molecular excitation and change to where they are no longer part of the system. Yeah. Now you can be out there, but using our traditional methods, you cannot do that. You have to wrap it in frequency.
How much have you?
What does that mean? You have to wrap it in frequency. There's no way he thinks we went to the moon, but now I need to know.
There's nothing still in the universe. There's nothing that doesn't have motion because everything is connected.
In a world full of mysteries and unexplored places, Terrence Howard, the popular American actor, is famous for always pushing the limits of technology and space travel. But what if we told you he thinks the moon has secrets beyond anything we could dream of? Could Terrence Howard know something we don't? Is there a bigger plan in motion? What hidden wonders might the moon conceal? And how might Howard's vision change our understanding of the universe? Join us in this fascinating
journey. Oh, man. There's no way this comment is genuine, but... Oh, man, it keeps going. I don't know if he thinks we went to the moon, and I don't care enough to do even 2 minutes worth of research.
Followed what he says on how he's planning on doing that.
He's just trying to get the people out there. And I think what they want to do is mine that asteroid belt. That's what they really want to do, and that's what we
think the purpose is mining.
Is mining the asteroid belt. There's one asteroid out there called Psyche that's worth $10 quadrillion worth of tungsten and tantalum and rare earth metals inside of there. That's just in one. So their ability to
said this one,
Psyche. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, if we could just grab one asteroid. Then we could completely, you know, screw over like China's grip on rare earths or something like that. I don't know. It's probably not an economically feasible idea, but in principle, it could happen.
So the ability to mine these asteroid belts, you know, gets rid of all the mining on the planet. They want to get to Mars so that they can do some mining. But they don't realize that we don't need any of that stuff anymore.
Why not?
Because of the tangential flight.
Because what the linchpin brings.
Yep.
By the resonant quality of the linchpin, the Howard comma. What that allows you to do is now have the universal template to put into any situation and open up. That's why.
But Terrence, you haven't done anything. Like, you haven't made anything that can do any of the things you're claiming.
It's used for faster than light communication, subspace communication,
Okay, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit and see if there's anything else that's any good here.
How was the pyramid built, based on what you know?
Well, there's a number of different conflicting ideas on it, but I just saw something very recent.
First thing I've heard him say that's true.
On lost history, where they were showing that the bubbles inside of the granite or inside of a lot of the material there, they have these little bubbles that come as a composite, that it was not big blocks of granite that was necessarily brought up there, that they were actually mixing all of this stuff together. There's that approach, but then
the fuck did any of there's bubbles in the granite. What I thought he was going to say is they brought the granite up in little pieces and then somehow made it fit together to the way that it looks like one piece. But no, there's bubbles in the granite and they mix stuff and then voila.
Idea of using resonance, something that we've always been able to use. You know, you can, the same way you're able to blow on a sheet of paper or hum and see something vibrate, that's something flowed. That's something that's always been used. And the amount of songs, like if you think about the Jericho, the walls of Jericho, and they went around it seven times, singing, hitting a particular tone and using harmonic or sympathetic harmonies to either break or to bring things together. There's a number of ways of using frequency. That's how I think all of that stuff was built.
Okay. No, I uploaded that video a few weeks ago, and the title was If Word Salad and Alphabet Soup Had a Baby. Should have saved that for Terrence Howard, but, you know, it's gone. Can't do anything about it now. Hope you enjoyed that. Thanks for watching, and I will see you tomorrow.